address the problems that have been, the issues that have been raised by the pension reform.
Because another issue along that line is the issue of furloughs for people who are close to retirement, because the way the pension is now structured, it's based on your last, whatever it is, 3 years, I think, and because salaries will be diminished by furloughs, it will have a fairly significant effect upon the pensions of people who are close to retirement. And for example, in Springfield, of course, there are many families where both husband and wife work for the state government. They're required to take a number of furloughs. They're close to retirement. Okay. It's a very, very significant issue, especially for couples. It will greatly reduce their pension for life. And those are workers working now. The reform, of course, only applies to those employed after this coming January 1.
We confronted that issue in our own furlough program exempted those employees who were going to retire between the time that the furlough program was enacted and I think August 15th of this year. Mm-hmm. So they were exempted for exactly that reason, because we needed to save the money short term but not at a long term disadvantage in terms of their pension. But I don't think the state did that.
No, they didn't.
For somebody who was going to, let's say, retire 2-3 years from now, our program even then would not have addressed that particular case.
Other questions?
I had one. I'm sorry. Will the final report that we'll see in June contain specificity as to the savings for going to the shared services model? My concern is it could have an unintended consequence of increasing costs as we move from a decentralized model to a partly centralized, partly decentralized, as opposed to going from a centralized, which we don't have, to the shared version. So I'm just wondering, what can we expect in the final report to actually demonstrate the savings?
In the final report, we do show examples of how the shared services can be implemented and gain savings. We do show examples of that. We will talk about even more detail about where and under what circumstances shared services works best. It's not a model that can be applied for every situation. And it could be applied at various different levels. For example, in some cases, you might have a shared service center where different units within a college get together. In certain other services, it could be different colleges getting together for creating shared service. And that's why what we recommend is that we look at specific instances where it can be implemented, not just blanket implemented everywhere. We have to look at specific places where this model can work. So we do not actually calculate a specific savings that will occur when this program is completely implemented, because we don't know how many of these specific cases where shared services could be implemented.
Gang, I'd say, Jim, before you speak, I think, you know, we had a hard time in here during the executive session hearing each other with the noise outside the door. Apparently it's hard to hear in the back. I think these mics are live. To the degree that everyone could use them, apparently that will please the audience.
I did have one question, Mr. Chairman. Vijay, have we taken into account the fact that, A, we try to train the best and brightest students that we can get, and at the same time we provide opportunities for students who may not be the best and brightest, and has that situation been taken into account in terms of centralization and decentralization? I'm concerned about the average student who is highly motivated, who may be able to be a very successful product from this university, versus the ones who have those high averages that are required to get into this institution.
Let me try. I'm not. I think one of the things what we, our committee has been very concerned about is to ensure that services that support students, that support faculty, that we maintain the level of those services and the quality of those services. When we talk about shared services, we are really talking about purely like business processes, human resource offices, business processing offices, accounting offices, financial offices. We are not talking about academic programs or academic issues at all. If I may also take this opportunity, Trustee Montgomery, to address very briefly your earlier point, our committee has been very focused on and looking at the issue of, even within our vendor pool, how do we increase diversity? And there are certain things that we could potentially do, and especially in terms of reform of processes, current procurement processes, that would encourage more diversity, and there are suggestions for that.
Thank you.
Any further questions? As you can understand the timing with the report coming out the 15th, we will certainly have opportunity to talk further about this in the July meeting also. But if you've got other questions to put forward now or particular areas that you want to make sure that focus is on, bring them up.
Just as a footnote, Mr. Chairman, I think we should acknowledge, and this builds on Trustee Montgomery's question, we should acknowledge that comparable planning efforts, internal study is going on under the direction of each of the three chancellors on the academic issues. Some of these have received a lot of media attention, some have received virtually none. But so what you've heard about here, primarily the administrative side, what you will be hearing and learning more about in the next several months will be the academic issues that in many ways, frankly, are more challenging, more difficult to address, but nonetheless represent real opportunities. So I just wanted to indicate there's another side of this that we haven't heard.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thanks again, Avijit and Craig. And we'll move on to Walter for your presentations.
Good morning. Before I start, I just want to confirm two things with regard to the previous conversation. We already have started taking steps with regard to developing supplemental options for the reduction in pension. We are going to be facing a recruiting season coming up here in the fall, so we basically have to put the pedal to the metal as far as coming up with some options for supplemental to supplement the pension situation. The second thing I wanted to just confirm is that with regard to furloughs, individuals that took furlough days are allowed to pay that to back to SERS, so they will not have a penalty. They can basically, Dr. Eikenberry was kind enough to get that arrangement made with SERS, so they can get that back. And my second thank you to Dr. Eikenberry is for making my tuition presentation. So.
Are there questions?
Well, on the supplemental pension, would that be the university's cost or the state's cost? The university.
It would have to be the university's cost, and whether or not it's basically a whether defined contribution or defined, defined contribution would probably be one way we have to look at it. But again, we have to bring those options back to the board. But for purposes, this is a very much of a limiting factor to basically cap out the benefit on a salary of $107,000. That's a difficult cap to work with. I'd like to because much of the tuition situation has already been discussed.
What is that?
That's Walter.
Maybe he's got a BlackBerry in his pocket. Nope. Do you have a BlackBerry in your pocket, Walter?
Nope, I don't have. I took all my electronics away. Even my pacemaker is gone.
Sold out.
I think in the interest of time, we'll just start with the financial indicators. talk about what's going on with the financials through the third quarter of for the university, and then go right into the tuition discussion. I start off with a quick presentation about the state budget. This is the budget, the operative budget. This is the governor's budget for 2011, fiscal year 2011. $29.1 billion is the total of the operating budget for the state that was proposed by the governor. And you can see that some of the biggest portions of it are the family health. This is elementary and secondary education. Higher education is just the 7% sliver of the total budget. When we construct the bring this over and look at higher education for 2011 was in the governor's budget. We had to construct this because he left the whole contribution to SERS. This is the state university retirement system out of the operating budget, and basically said that was going to be paid for with bonds. So to basically put this on a comparable basis, we have put the about $900 million of contribution into this presentation. We look at the next slide. This is a comparison of this budget for fiscal year 2011 to 2010. You can see the biggest growth is in the SERS contribution. That would be the need for a significant contribution to SERS. The part that belongs to the publics, University of Illinois, about 23% of the overall public of the publics. All the other publics are about 20% of the higher education budget. Financial aid, ISAC, remained roughly the same as it was last year, just a little bit of a decrease. Community colleges remained roughly the same as it was in the prior year. So what this basically represents is the publics took approximately $100 million cut from last year in the budget. And when you think about what's been talked about in the papers, a $1.3 billion cut in education, $100 million is basically for public higher education, and the rest is for K through 12 across the state. And so when you hear about that in the papers, that report of the cut in education, that's the composition. The cut for the University of Illinois for 2011 we're working with right now is about $45.5 million has been the cut from 2010 to the 2011 budget. What this means is that we now have, in constant dollars over the last 10 years, the support for higher education has dropped 30% in the last 10 years. ISAC, this is financial aid, down 20%. Community colleges down 28% in the last 10 years. This is support from the state tax appropriation, the GRF. I want to move on real quickly to our focus. When we review the performance for looking at the instructional budget of the university. This is the unrestricted budget of the university, $1.853 billion for purposes of 2010's fiscal year. Of course, the majority of the resources, this is where the money comes from. The $763 million is coming from the state appropriation in 2010. That includes the surveys in that number, and some legislative set-asides are in that number. Tuition, $730 million, so very much tuition and state assistance is approximately equal. The rest of our support for the budget is coming from what we call institutional funds. This is indirect cost recoveries that we get off of our research projects. There's a small share of that indirect costs that we can recover from hosting the research activities here at the university. Also, there's administrative cost allowances that we are allowed to take as a part of its 3.25% of the of auxiliary operations that we are allowed to take into the under the unrestricted or the instructional funds. I'll move right to the next piece is looking at this situation and what it looks like. This is the core of our financial challenge for 2010 and going into 2011. This is the status of the state appropriation as of Monday. It's the same as of today. The total receivable as of today from the state of Illinois is $381 million. The prospects of receiving that before, we have 40 days left in the fiscal year. I think that I'm probably only expecting some monies to help support the Medicaid Trust Fund, maybe five.